Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to get him?
Nah, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Lee and Keys, Real Talk, episode 57. You know, Lee says that we were talking earlier, and he said there's a lot of moving parts for this show. And I really got a kick out of that, so I had to quote that. Go check that out in the description. And also check out the guest calling number in the description as well, because I think this is going to be a good one tonight. There's quite a few things that I think we'll be interested to talk about. Lee, how you doing over there?
Yo, what up, Keys, man? I'm good, man. Episode 57, man. I want to dedicate this show to I wanted to dedicate it to three people, but I can't remember who the three people were. I know one of them is Jemele Hill because I heard on ESPN is buying her out of her contract. So she'll be leaving ESPN here, I want to say September 1st. Then I also want to shout out my brother. He'll be in town tomorrow. First time him coming out here to Denver. So he'll be out here tomorrow. Shout out to my brother, Juwan. And then lastly, man, I just want to shout out to our listeners, man. What's up with y'all? Thanks for supporting the show. You know, we appreciate y'all. And we're going to bring y'all some fire tonight, me and my man Keys. What it do, Keys?
Of course, of course. You know, the last couple of shows, usually, if for those who listen, y'all know Lee, he stays up to date. He stays consistent with the call-outs and the shout-outs on the show, and usually he's got somebody to affiliate with the number episode of our show. You know, he's pretty good with that. Usually I don't know. I haven't seen enough numbers in my day yet to match up a number with a person every time. But, you know, he do his thing with that, so he definitely got a pretty good memory to be able to, you know, shoot out, you know those dedications in 2 seconds. You know, whether it has to do with the number of episode or not. But one thing I do want to do right now is I want to dedicate this show and just a shout out overall to an artist that a new artist who he's from the Boston area, and I had heard about this guy like probably about 4 years ago. Some people I knew from my city opened up for him when he came to do a performance out here in Mass, you know, about 15 minutes from where I live. And I had seen the name, like, on the headlines. I just never really gave it the chance to listen to it because, you know, I'm kind of stubborn when it comes to music sometimes. But I've gotten better with that over time. You know, I give a lot more artists a chance to listen to because I want people to give me that same kind of chance. So, and plus, you never know if you'll like something until you try it, in the same way with food. So if you're not going to try the food, you'll never know if it might be your favorite food after. And that's just what I've learned in the past couple of years. So, and even in the last year alone, I try a lot more food just off the strength of not knowing whether I'd really like it or really not like it. Cause usually a lot of it is the fear of thinking that you won't like something, whether it's music or food. But then if you do end up liking it, then it's either your favorite artist and he'll be in your rotation every day or you know, kind of like the artist that I'm about to shout out. So shout out to Cam Meekins. His name is Cam Meekins, everybody. He's from the Boston area. He's so dope, and I think he's so dope. He puts a lot of emotion into his lyrics, and you could tell he really sits and thinks about the songs that he's writing, and he definitely he does a lot of reflecting, you know, in throughout his career, and you can see him going through the motions, you know, throughout the years, whether him being on and off tour and dropping albums and meeting with record labels and things like that. You know, this kid, you know, I kind of have dug a little bit into his career because once I, you know, heard some of his songs, I had to go back and listen to some of the older songs. And actually the older songs was the first ones that really hit me because I was just listening to, you know, I have a Spotify premium membership, so, you know, I kind of just let it play sometimes. You know, I have playlists that I listen to, but I kind of just be letting it play sometimes, and I'll let it go off random. So if I queue up like 10 songs, and I have a playlist of all, you know, different songs. Once that thing ends, it's just going to play a random artist, a song by a random artist related to the stuff I was already listening to. And that's what happened. It played a song called Better Days by Cam Meekins. And when I heard that, yo, when I heard that song at work, I was blown away. Like, I was literally up on the ladder. I was, like, stocking boxes up on the shelf, man. That song came on. I was going up and down the ladder doing my thing, getting work off. And, man, that song really hit me. Like, I replayed it, like, 2, 3, maybe 4 times, like, back to back to back right after that because I was like, wow.
What's the guy's name?
I had never heard that song. His name is Cam Meekins.
Cam Meekins, okay.
Yeah, C-A-M. Well, like, show up, Cameron, C-A-M.
Okay, I got you.
M-double-E. Yeah, so Cam Meekins, he's super dope. I mean, at least I think so. I can't always speak for everybody because the music that I tend to listen to and really take a liking to isn't always what somebody else might like, and that's okay. But I think he's super dope, and that's definitely, at this point, somebody I look up to in the music industry. Like, that's what he's doing in his career is, like, things I want to do, like, and the approach that he takes, you know, at the level he's at is so dope. And a lot of the concepts that he'd be using in his songs are the things that, like, I'm experimenting with right now. And he hits a level of emotion that I'm trying to reach and I want to affect other people with. So, yeah, shout out to Cam Meekins, super dope. That's, like, probably my favorite artist right now. I mean, I got a list of other ones too that are on the come up that are my other favorite artists, but that one's really been in my rotation super heavy lately. So if you're listening to this show, go check out Cam Meekins. You know, he's super dope. But off that topic real quick, I have something that I wanted to ask you, Lee, and this is completely way off from what I was just talking about. And I don't know what Lee was going to ask tonight, but I just want to get this off there first because I'm pretty sure he probably would have asked me about this if I didn't beat him to the punch and get to it right now. So I'm just going to get it off right now. So today's Wednesday. So on Monday, a report came out. Well, not really a report, but like the actual statement came out. It was actually stated on Monday. Y'all know if you listen to the show, pretty much my favorite UFC fighter or in my top two favorite UFC fighters. I always talk about this guy, my boy T. Wood, Tyron Woodley, UFC welterweight champion, most dominant champion in the UFC, most hated and most underrated. Tyron Woodley,
well,
he came out on Monday.
Champion, but okay.
All right, so he came out on Monday and said that, wait, so a little background. On the last show, we were talking about how there's a backup because, so not this weekend coming up, but about a week and a half from now, you have next Saturday's UFC 228 card, and the main event of that card is Tyron Woodley defending his welterweight strap versus Darren Till, kickboxer, really, really good kickboxer and striking guy, and that's going to be a good scrap. But the UFC has came out, you know, in the lead up to that event. And they pulled a smart move by, you know, considering that, you know, let's just say one of the guys falls out of the fight. You know, that's all eyes looking at you, Darren Till, because he misses weight. So I'm pretty sure this was set up with the idea that he falls out of the fight because, you know, my boy T. Wood does not back out of fights. I don't remember the last time he's backed out of a fight or missed weight or any of that unprofessionalness, Darren Till. So make weight, buddy, because you're going to fall out of the fight. So they put Kamaru Usman, you know, elite contender, really, really skilled wrestler. You know, they put him in there. He's going to weigh in the same day as everybody. He's going to weigh in as if he's, you know, scheduled to fight, which he kind of is, but he's just a scheduled backup for the main event in case one of the guys falls out, a.k.a. if Darren Till misses weight, then my boy T. Wood will be fighting Kamaru Usman for the strap instead, because the UFC doesn't want to make it a non-title fight because somebody missed weight, because that's what the Athletic Commission will end up doing. They won't allow a title to be on the line versus a guy who missed weight. We've seen that happen earlier this year with Yoel Romero. He couldn't fight for the belt because he missed weight, And so we all know athletic commission does not allow titles to be passed off a guy who misses weight. So that's a cool thing that they did. But what kind of shoots that down, and I don't know how this will go, but so Woodley came out and said on Monday that he will definitely not fight Kamaru Usman. He said he will fight Darren Till whether he makes weight or not. He said he is fighting Darren Till no matter what because that is who he trained for, and he did not train for Kamaru Usman, and he will not take him on short notice because he kind of insinuated that because he respects Kamaru Usman enough and he acknowledges that he's a dangerous competitor, somebody who he would want to get, you know, a full prep for, not, you know, a 24-hour notice type deal if Darren Till misses weight. So he said he would definitely not fight Kamaru Usman, and that whether Darren Till missed weight or not, as long as he weighs in the day before the fight, that Woodley said he is fighting him. Now, I don't know if the UFC will allow Darren Till to fight if he misses weight. They'll probably want to put Usman in there, but they don't want to lose the whole main event if Woodley says no, because they want to have something. So they can't have, you know, two X's in the equation and end up with nothing. So they got to make a move somewhere. Now, I want to ask, I'm going to put the mic over to Lee and ask how he feels about that whole thing.
First of all, T-Wood, you knew that Usman would always be an alternate. So you saying that you wouldn't fight him, it goes against everything the UFC is trying to have in place for main events. So him saying that he wouldn't fight Usman kind of strikes me a different way, especially when you say he's the most dominant champion. If he's the most dominant champion, why wouldn't he fight Usman? I mean, you know the guy's training. You know the guy's weighing in on the day of the same day as you and Darren Till. So I don't understand why he'll refuse to fight Usman. I mean, everybody knew what about 6 weeks ago that Usman would be doing this, and the U.S. even put it out. They even have Usman under contract to as if he's fighting this weekend, next weekend. So I just don't like the way Tyron Woodley put that. And if I was somebody willing to put that out, because it makes it look like, to me, it makes it like he's scared to fight Usman. Why would you fight Darren Till if he doesn't make weight when you could have a championship fight against a guy that's gonna weigh in, that's been training? It's not like it's a 2 week call up or nothing like that. So that kind of struck me. I was kind of shocked, man. I was like, wow, I can't believe T. Will would actually say that. You know, especially with him being a champ. Man, it kind of took me off guard. But at the same time, you know, I kind of understand where he's coming from. You know, he's training to fight Darren Till. You know, Usman and Till, I think, have two different styles. So, but at the same time, I think his fight prep should have been training to fight both guys. So, because I'm quite sure Usman is training to fight both guys. So, but that's your boy. Your boy said that, man. He came out his mouth and said that. And I can see if it was like a last-minute replacement, but it isn't. It's something everybody's known about, that Usman would be the alternate. So I don't think the UFC will let him fight Darren Till if Till doesn't make weight. I think the UFC would definitely go to Tyron Woodley. And they will either tell him he's fighting Usman, or they might even go hard on him and tell him that if he don't fight Usman, they will strip him of the belt, which I think will be going overboard. But we got to see what happens, man. But I was kind of shocked that he would say that, though.
I mean, I was reading the quote from what he said, and I mean, the way he made it sound was a really good pitch for why he wouldn't fight Usman. But the way you just broke it down was valid too. So, because I didn't have both perspectives when I was reading that. I just only got the champ side of it. You know, if I could pull up the exact quote, I'm going to try to find it. But if I can't in the meantime, I know that he said something along the lines of that he's been training for. I'm trying to look up Darren Till's height. But he said, like, I'm training for, like, a 6-foot kickboxer, striker, not a 5'10" wrestler in Kamaru Usman. So why would I fight Usman when I don't have the prep or something like that?
What's your take on it? I mean, that's your boy.
Well, you know, like I said,
I think I put him in a hard spot, folks. I think in a hard spot, folks. I think he's going to have to say something bad about his boy.
Nah, so look at this. This is the thing, is that if you really look at it, Woodley's the only guy who fights the top guy in his division every time. It's understandable that he wouldn't want to fight a guy if he doesn't have a full two months, or I think he even does 3-month camps. So if he wants his full camp to fight that style and just train for one style fighter, it's understandable. But I can understand the UFC wanting to hold on to a main event. You know, I could.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess it is a little – I mean, I guess I wasn't expecting to see him come out. Like, I didn't think he – I guess I didn't expect him to be so vocal about you know, the plan B, you know, a week and a half before the event. I mean, it's definitely surprising to me. I understand both sides because your legacy is on the line. You don't want to get – I mean, it's not like – I would have had worse, you know, if you wanted me to say something bad, you probably would have found me saying something bad if he had said, oh, you know, I'm not going to fight Kamaru Usman because he's not a worthy opponent or he doesn't deserve to fight me. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it was like something like that and he was just being all cocky with it and just sounding, that to me is like a more scared man when you talk like that. But when you're just basically respecting your opponent's skill level, and with the approach that he took to it, I can easily respect that a lot more. I don't know what'll happen though. The UFC, I know they're gonna want to hold on to a main event because they really don't have much going on, it seems, for the end of the year. So. And Woodley hasn't fought in over a year, so I know they're going to want him to fight no matter what. So I'm interested to see what ends up happening because Darren Till, I also read a report about Darren Till and him saying that this weight cut has been extremely difficult for him as well. And I read another quote saying that he doesn't even want to train anymore because the weight cut has affected him so much. So,
I don't know, man.
This guy sounds like a crybaby to me because, man, you know, Woodley also walks around at 205, 210. Like, there's a lot of guys that do that. It's just that Darren Till is the only one that brags about it constantly and saying that he wants to be a 3-division champion. Like, no one else talks about that. No one talks about the weight that they walk around at. Look at Romero. I'm sure he walks around much bigger because he can't make weight either. There's a lot of people lately who can't make weight, and they walk around bigger, but they don't cry about it all the time. Darren Till is always crying, man. I'm sick of this crybaby.
Yeah, man. I just think, I understand what Willie – I do understand where Willie's coming from. I get it. You know, basically when you're in camp, you focus to fight one guy, but you knew this guy was going to be – the alternate. So I'm just saying, you know, it's not like it's a shock. But I look at it from your perspective, too. You know, all of a sudden, the day before the fight, you get a new opponent, you know, actually a guy that's in the top 10. But Woodley is a world-class wrestler also. So him and Usman, basically, they have, I mean, I would say Woodley has better skills than Usman because Woodley is a vet. But I just think that you will have to fight the guy because the UFC put this in place for a reason. So, but I wanted to ask you about this. So
let's hear it.
So Tony Ferguson is on the same card as Khabib and Conor. He's fighting Anthony Pettis. Now, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that either Conor or Khabib falls, you know, have to fall off the fight. Do you think the UFC will actually move Ferguson up to the main event? Or do you think they would just move Pettis and Ferguson up to the main event and scrap the Conor Khabib fight to another pay-per-view?
I mean, that's an interesting thing because I think the UFC is scared to have to end up with a Khabib Ferguson main event again, because if you were to have Ferguson come in to fight Khabib, they would be scared that they even make it to the cage somehow. Like, you would change the main event the last second and say, wow, you know, the fourth or fifth time you're finally going to get Ferguson Khabib fight. You know, the fourth or fifth time we tried to book it. And then before they get to the cage, Tony Ferguson slips on a banana peel and, you know, he hits his elbow or something and he can't fight. Or Khabib, you know, gets food poisoning from eating tiramisu, you know, in Dagestan, and he can't make it to the fight. So them guys are both trouble. Them guys can't make it to fight each other every single time for some weird reason or the next. So I think UFC is kind of... The UFC is wary, and they are hesitant to make that match. I think if it happened, they would want to do it because that would be the next biggest option and the next biggest pull for a main event. But they'd still be worried because of how many times that match has fell through. Like, it's baffling how many times that match has fell through, and the fans have been disappointed over and over and over.
Yeah, I think it's been at least – I know it's been at least twice, but it may have been – maybe three times that it fell. I can recall off the top of my head two times that it fell through, but it may have been as many as three. But I'm kind of thinking that they put Ferguson on that card for a reason, and I'm thinking that they think that not Conor will fall out, but Khabib will pull out. Because Khabib has been known to pull out of big fights against big names. So I think that's the UFC ultimate plan, is for, you know, to have Tony on that card just in case. But I would hope as a champion that a guy like Khabib would accept the challenge of fighting Conor, because he's actually been calling Conor out. So I hope he doesn't pull out. I hope, the fight goes through. But at the same time, I wouldn't mind seeing even though Tony is coming off a serious injury, I think he could be able to hang against both of those guys. Like me and you talked about on our last show, ring rust, I think, is just a state of mind. I think once you get in there, it'll probably take you about two minutes to get your timing down. But once you get your timing down, you go back to what you know and let your skills show. So I think I'm happy that the UFC put him on the card, because that was a smart move on their part. So, but I hope Conor and Khabib both make it to the fight, and that we finally get to see this fight happen.
Yeah, that event I'm hoping actually stays intact the way it is, because, especially that fight, it's been so long. They speculated that, you know, even like almost a year and a half ago at this point, they were speculating that. You know, they were speculating Conor and Khabib, you know, at UFC with the card when they're originally supposed to be the co-main event to the Woodley and Stephen Thompson rematch. That card, when you had Ferguson and Khabib as the co-main event, people were talking about a Conor and Khabib fight or vice either which way, you know, even months leading up to that. So, like, then you're talking, like, more than a year and a half, almost 2 years in the making, you know, either one of those matches ever since them two guys were the number one and number two lightweights. And then, you know, McGregor beat Alvarez. Those were the names. People have been calling for both of those fights. But Conor and Khabib, you know, with the bus incident and everything, so much more after that. So I hope they fight, though. I hope Khabib doesn't cry and he makes it to the cage.
Well, I do got a disclaimer about this fight, though. My disclaimer about this fight is everybody keeps talking about Khabib's record. You know, he's undefeated, la, 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 la. But when you look at the guys that he has fought and beaten, who are they? Only guy that I can recall him beating that's of that's popular is who? The guy
he... Khabib?
Yeah. Who has
well,
he beaten?
Khabib, I know he fought Rafael Dos Anjos at one point. That's one.
Okay.
That all right,
so he beat three guys. Okay, so he beat three guys. He beat Alcantara.
Can we even count
him.
That, though? I mean, he wasn't even a top 10 guy. Like, is that even really, like...
Yeah, he was, like, number 12. So, yeah, because
yeah,
he wasn't even
that's, like, barely
in
even
so,
a notable fight.
Yeah, so I'm going to just say that he hasn't beaten anybody. So, I'm tired of the UFC hyping up his record. His record ain't that great against. He ain't fought no superstars. So let's pump the brakes on that, UFC.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I think if he was, because you got guys like Bisping and Cowboy Cerrone who actually have like 20 fights in the UFC. Khabib's 26-0 and he's got like 8 fights in the UFC. What the hell kind of record is that? You're not even fighting on the big stage. It don't matter. You know what I mean? This guy's fighting in the you're not balling in the NBA, bro. You're balling in the Japanese league. Like, don't nobody give a damn about
that.
Yeah,
man. I know, man. That's what drives me crazy. And then, you know, man, every time they always say, yeah, he's undefeated. He's 26-0. Oh, man, la, 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 la. Man. Let him win a couple big-name fights in the UFC. And then get at me, not these little fights. This Ukrainian mixed martial arts league, you know, they fight at the local rec. Right? No fights shouldn't count.
Yeah, nah. I mean, so if you really look at it, he's only what the hell is Pro FC? I don't know what the
exactly.
Hell is Pro FC. I just got confused just trying to figure it out. All right, so yeah, nah, what I say, he's 8-0? Nah, Khabib is 10-0 in the UFC. But that's like, you know, he was 8-0, like adding on his two more recent fights because he had the Barboza fight not that long ago and then he had the Alcantara fight. So I was pretty spot on. 8-0, I mean, like with, capped off with the Michael Johnson fight. Also, side note, Michael Johnson just had a good win the other night, split decision win. It was kind of a close decision, I guess.
That was a good fight, and it was close.
Yeah.
It was a good fight, and it was close. If they would have gave it to me, I wouldn't have been mad about it.
Yeah, that would have been cool. You know, they both put on a good fight. I'm just happy for my boy Michael Johnson that he got a nod from the judges because he needs a couple. He needed a W on his record to get his confidence back up, because he had a couple tough rounds lately.
Yeah, but another thing that popped up this week that actually one of my coworkers, this other I'm gonna have this guy on our show, man. He's a big UFC fan, and he's actually on my team. And he came in the other day. He was like, "Lee, man, I gotta talk to you." And I was like, "Yo, what's up, man?" He was like, "Yo, did you hear the news?" I was like, "Nah, what news?" He was like, "Oh yeah, they trying to have DC versus John Jones at MSG." And I was like, "Well, DC not gonna do that because that's too quick of a turnaround for him." And he was like, "Well, when they talked to John Jones, John Jones said he will fight him at MSG, and if Daniel don't want to fight him, he would rather fight Gustafson for the interim belt." And I said, "This interview came from John Jones." He was like, "Yeah, it was John Jones." And he couldn't remember what show it was on or who interviewed him. And I was like, "Man," I say, "my man Keys, he already know DC doesn't want to fight nobody but Brock Lesnar." And I say, if he was to turn down this John Jones fight, I say, I don't know how my man Keys would react to that. So, Keys, if DC turns down John Jones, MSG, main event, would that change your opinion on him?
Well, I don't know what – well, I mean, my current opinion of him is I don't really have many good things to say right now. So, yeah, I guess my current opinion of him would just be – it would just tack on to my current perspective, and it would just make things worse. And I would just have – I mean, but at the same time, though, it's understandable because if I'm DC, like, I know that – like if I know I want to end my career, like DC want to retire in, like, you know, the first half of next year. So if I know I want to end my career, why not end off with, you know, back to back big wins rather than take a risky fight where you've already lost twice to this guy, and now you could potentially lose to him on a bigger stage than both of the last two stages that you've previously lost to him on. This would be the biggest stage out of those three fights that he has fought him on. So not only does he have a big chance of losing again, he could have a potential big loss on the biggest stage in the UFC today. Is that arguably the biggest venue in the UFC today? I don't know. Is MGM Grand bigger?
I would say MSG is bigger because of the fight that the UFC went through as far as the politics and everything, just to get the UFC regulated there and allowed to be showcased there. So I would say MSG is probably the biggest venue. I mean, because they've been fighting in Vegas for years. They've been fighting in L.A. for years. You know, they've been fighting all around the country for years. But they only been fighting the MSG, what, about 2 years now? So, yeah, man, I would say MSG is the biggest event for them. So I think DC, he has a chance to actually – go out on top. If he do it the right way, he could actually, if he could find a way to beat John Jones, he could say he beat the most dominant light heavyweight champion in UFC history, and he beat the most dominant heavyweight champion in UFC history. And then he could just ride off on his white horse and call it a career. Do I think he would do that? No. I think the UFC and him are hell-bent on him fighting Brock Lesnar. And that's the direction they want to go. And
yeah,
as a fan,
I think so too.
And as a fan, I don't like that. As a fan, I don't like that because what has Brock Lesnar done to deserve a championship fight? Nothing. Oh, and then John Jones said he would even move up to heavyweight to fight DC if that was the case. He said he wouldn't even fight him at light heavy. He would fight him at heavyweight if necessary. So. But the UFC is hell-bent on getting Brock Lesnar in there against DC. So I think that's what we stuck with. But I just wish the true competitor in DC came out and for him to say, "The hell with that, I want to fight the best." And everybody know who the best is.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I just, at the same time, it's like, you got to think that, like, behind all his confidence, it definitely hurts and has hurt his pride, and it kind of sticks with him that, like, you know, this guy's beaten me twice. Like, I don't think that he has all that much confidence of beating him in the third fight on a huge stage. He should. he should want to fight the best guys. I mean, that was his attitude towards the last two fights. He wanted to fight he wanted to fight John Jones, he wanted to get the rematch and everything. But I mean, I think after being knocked out, I think that might have really stuck in his head, no pun intended. I mean, you get beat on points in the first fight, and that's okay because you get beat on points. You know, it's nothing like getting knocked out. I mean, it's not even nearly as embarrassing. If you last, 25 minutes, because they probably had a main event fight, you last 25 minutes with him. I mean, he could be the best fighter on the planet, and you went the whole distance. I mean, that's not really an embarrassing loss. You just lost. He just beat you. That's it. But getting knocked out is kind of just that's a really tough loss. That's a loss that kind of sticks in people's heads when they watch it. I mean, they don't really remember, guys outpointing guys. They'll remember that he won, but the image is not in their head the same way as a head kick KO. You know what I'm saying?
And
I'm sure that sticks in the guys who be getting knocked out. Like how could anybody ever forget that knockout of when Edson Barboza? Remember when Edson Barboza did that like spinning back kick, and that guy like he knocked out that dude, and he was like stiff with his head up like on the mat. It was like a vicious knockout.
He was knocked out before he was out cold before he even hit the mat. He was still.
He looked like he was knocked out standing up, and then he just happened to fall over because he was unconscious, which is like scary. He didn't even really. He was knocked out upon impact, and then he just toppled over. But then he was like still stuck in that position, like he was as if he thought he was standing up. Like people can never forget about that knockout, and that guy could probably never forget about that knockout. Like, do you think that guy would like want to rematch Edson Barboza after getting like head kicked like that? I'm sure he wouldn't have much confidence. I know it's a different scenario, but those kind of knockouts really stick in the fans' minds. They don't forget about that shit. So I don't know how the fans would even take to a third John Jones and DC fight, to be honest. I don't know if the fans would really buy into that too much.
I think the fans would because they probably the two guys that's been at the top of the 205 division for the last couple of years. DC fans will want to see him fight John Jones to see whether or not he could finally do it. And I think the John Jones fans will want to see him fight DC just to shut him up one last time to prove that, John is a better fighter than him. But, as a fan, we really don't have much say so, man, because the UFC really don't listen to us, man. They always say they try to put on fights for the fans, but the fight the fans want to see is DC fight Stipe in a rematch. That's what the fans want to see. And the fans want to see DC versus Gustafson. That ain't happening. That fight ain't happening, so you can't say it's about the fans. Because you're going against everything. You're going against everything the fans want. The fans could care less about Brock Lesnar. If anything, the fans will want to see him fight Stipe Miocic or Francis Ngannou or another heavyweight. They don't want to see him fight Daniel Cormier because everybody knows Cormier is just going to take him down, dominate him on the mat, and it's going to be a boring fight.
Yeah, and I'm not a fan of Brock Lesnar at all. Even in WWE, I don't think he's a star, so I never thought that he was a star. So, anyways, enough about that. I'm starting to feel like I'm on PEDs just talking about all this. Oh my God, like sweating over here. This is crazy. I'm about to like start doing crazy push-ups to go build a wall or something. Oh my God, got like GNC supplements on deck for this show. Okay, so dick pills over here, Jesus. So, what I was trying to tell you is I got some other news the other day that came out. This was 4 days ago, and this is huge. And I don't know if you saw this yet, but like, if you did or you didn't, you're still gonna be pretty excited. And I heard that the fight has been offered to both both guys and they both want it. That's what I've heard. I don't know if it's signed and sealed in stone yet, but I know the fight is on the table and it's planned for UFC 231, which I'm pretty sure is the event 2 days before the card that you're going to when UFC comes to Denver. So when I thought about this, I thought to myself, oh my God, Lee has such a crazy week of fights that's going to happen. That first, like, week and a half, like a December, you're going to have like such a back-to-back lineup of good fights to watch. And that's such a, I was like, man, this guy really blessed. He don't even know it. Oh, speaking of blessed. Wow. Yo, I didn't even mean that. They ain't even get the lines within the lines right there. So anyways, Max Holloway and Brian Ortega, UFC 231. The fight has been offered and both, I heard that it's in the works. And it's going down December 8th. Have you heard about that?
I read it, but I didn't really put much stock in it. Because, you know, fights in the UFC, they get thrown out a lot. You know, they get thrown around a lot, kicked around the horn and all this good stuff. But I want to see this fight. I'm hoping Max is all right.
Too.
You know that you know that whatever's going on with him, you know that they're gonna rectify. You know that's gonna be taken care of, because you know I hate to see a champion on the shelf with a division basically held up because T-City wasn't gonna fight anybody unless he fought Max Holloway. So basically, that division was gonna be on lock, was gonna be basically at a stalemate until something happened. So if this fight happens, I think this fight will be potentially fight of the year material because both of these guys bring a certain amount of skills to the octagon. Both of them are on serious winning streaks. Man, and T-City coming off a big win on Frankie Edgar, who was supposed to fight Max. So if this fight happens, man, I will be so excited for the UFC to close the year out in a good fashion, because you know the beginning part of the year, you know it wasn't, the UFC was kind of, I was kind of down on the UFC, but if they get this fight done, finishing on a strong note would be great going into 2019.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree with that. You know, Max Holloway has, I just want to, like, pull this up real quick so we can just know. So, the Brian Ortega's first fight in the UFC was overturned, so it was a no contest. And then after that, he went 6-0 in the UFC. Max Holloway, like, Brian Ortega is also undefeated in his career. I mean, he's 14-0, but you can kind of look at it the same way as we were looking at Khabib, is like, really, who are any of these guys that he fought? I mean, the only names that I even know is Diego Brandão. I know of him. He fought Clay Guida, but, I mean, Clay Guida, okay. Cub Swanson, I mean, he's inconsistent, so beating him is really like, it's whatever. And then Frankie Edgar, I mean, beating Frankie Edgar in 2018, he's still, that's probably his, to me, that's like his most notable, probably the only notable win on Brian Ortega's record, if we're really being honest here. I mean, all these other fights, this is whatever to me. I don't even know who any of these guys are. And the few that I do know, I don't put no stock into that. So, beating Frankie Edgar, I mean, he's a top competitor, but at the same time, if you've been watching the UFC, you know that Frankie Edgar has taken so many shots. If I looked at it, I'm sure he's taken some of the probably top five, and this is off the top, he's probably taken top five most shots absorbed in UFC history. He's taken so many shots. The fact it took him all the way until his fight with Brian Ortega to finally get knocked out is unbelievable, and he should be commended just for even going such a long career in the UFC, not just all these other random fight leagues, in the UFC, and take until 2018 to finally get knocked out. And not saying that he should be praised for getting knocked out, but just the fact that he lasted that long and fought so many killers and wasn't knocked out until that time, where he got caught with, you know, Ortega got a lucky shot. But
yeah.
Holloway is a veteran in this fight. That's what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah,
Max Holloway is
exactly.
A veteran. He's got the real win streak. I'm about to pull up Max Holloway's record, and then we're going to really talk about it, because Max Holloway is on like a 12 win streak.
He done,
all
yeah,
these guys.
He done beat some guys, man. Yeah, he done beat some guys.
Yeah, he has a good
streak. I mean, when I look at Max Holloway's record, and I look at Frankie Edgar's record, they done fought some really, really top-tier guys. They ain't just been fighting guys, you know, that's bottom of the barrel or middle of the pack. They done fought main event type of guys throughout their career. And that's to be commended. But sometimes, you know, I think guys, you know, when they not, you know, if they fight for the belt, then, you know, they kind of not, they not in championship contention anymore. They start fighting guys that's, you know, below their skill level. Just to just to make money or whatever, but I just think the UFC needs to keep guys that are in the top 10, keep them fighting guys in the top 10 until, you know, their skills aren't there no more. You know, I just hate to see guys go out like Diego Sanchez, Ben Lieben, you know, Chuck Liddell. I hate to see guys go out like that, man. With, you know, when you see them in the ring, you hoping the night ain't the night that they get killed in the octagon or something like that. You know, you want to see them walk out the octagon, you know, with their head held high with all their Socrates about themselves. So, yeah, Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar, definitely some tough guys. And, you know, they done fought the who's who. So, who has Max fought in his career? I know you pulled that up.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I was waiting to rebuttal with that in any second. Just to put this out there right off the bat, okay, is that in his last five fights, you can even say his last six fights, in his last five, no, in, okay, we'll say in his last six fights, Max Holloway has beaten Charles Oliveira, Jeremy Stephens, Ricardo Lamas, Anthony Pettis, and Jose Aldo twice, back-to-back. That 6-0 right there blows away Brian Ortega's 6-0 in his last six fights. I don't give a damn about his 6-0 in his last six fights. I respect his power and his skill, but being honest here, his record is trash compared to Holloway's record. That's just how I feel. This 6-0... it is already blown away Brian Ortega 6-0, and not even just to mention that there's so many more wins, and this is all in the UFC. I just named the last six, which happen to be the most notable names, and because he's fighting killers back to back to back to back, top guys in the featherweight division, not low level guys that, you know, tomato cans, everyone's beaten. And Charles Oliveira is really good too. He just had a good performance in his last one. If anybody thought that I just threw that in there trying to sweep it under the rug, he's good too. And Holloway beat Cub Swanson way back. And I said, that's not even, you know what I'm saying? Cub Swanson, to hell with that. You know, he's beaten these other guys. You know, I didn't even know Andre Feely was in the UFC 4 years ago. I didn't even know who that was, to be honest with you. He beat him then. I didn't even know who the hell that was. Is only he has three losses in his career. He's never been knocked out, much like Frankie Edgar had never been knocked out. At the time they were originally supposed to fight, at that point, neither of them guys had ever been knocked out. Both the times they were scheduled to fight, neither of them had ever been KO'd. And they're both excellent strikers. Holloway has only lost three fights in his career, and two of those were by decision. And if you look at who he lost to, I mean, he lost a split decision to Dennis Bermudez. That's probably the most disappointing loss on his record, because it was Dennis Bermudez. I mean, okay, maybe he was better a couple of years ago, but all right, like that out of the. And then he lost to McGregor. Okay, McGregor's great. And then he lost to Dustin Poirier. And Poirier's great. I mean, Poirier is a top five lightweight in the world right now. Any, I would put Poirier against any top five lightweight in any league. That's how I feel about it. Poirier is awesome.
I like Dustin, man. Dustin is a tough guy, man. And a lot of people, you know, they only, you know, when they think of Dustin Poirier, they think of, you know, just his stand-up game. But Dustin can go to the ground. You know, he can wrestle a little bit. You know, he got all right takedown defense. So they like
he's a well-rounded guy
in there. So he's a well-rounded fighter. So, you know, that's to be respected. But, you know, like you said, Max is 6-0 compared to T-City's 6-0 doesn't even compare, man. It's like they shouldn't even be brought up in the same conversation. You know, it's just like when you talk about the best players in the NBA, you got LeBron, and then you got KD, you got Steph, Westbrook, and, you know, the Brown, and then you got Hassan Whiteside in there with them. you can't throw his name in there. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's how I look at it when you just threw that out there, because man, Max is for some guys, bro, and you know it ain't T City fault that you know that he ain't fought that same caliber guys, because the UFC normally what they'll do if they really like you, you know they'll have you fight a couple cream puffs, you know, just to get your name built up, and then you know they'll put you in against a top 10 guy to see what you got, and. Case in point is Yair Rodriguez. You know, they hyped him up and all this and all that. And then they put him in there with Frankie. And basically we haven't heard from him ever since. So
the thing that killed go ahead.
But me and you, we're not the average fans because, you know, we do this show, so we do have to dig a little deeper. We're not knocking T City's record in the UFC. Only thing we're saying is don't try to put his record side by side with Max's record because they don't even belong in the same conversation. But T-City, you know, he gets a title fight, and, you know, he gets to either prove us right or prove us wrong in there, even though we haven't made a pick of who's going to win the fight. But, you know, he gets to go in there and prove that his winning streak ain't a fluke. That's the way I should have said it.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, when you told me how that you couldn't put stock into the fight right away, it did make me second guess because Max Holloway has been having a lot of health issues and those have affected him making it to his last couple bookings. You know, the Frankie fight the first time, it wasn't his fault. You know, he could have fought, but Frankie pulled out. Then the next time, Holloway pulled out, and then the fight after that, he was supposed to fight Ortega, and then Holloway pulled out again. I mean, not that he wants to pull out, but, I mean, yeah, he was having health issues. So, I mean, his last two bookings, he's been having some health issues. So, I hope it happens. I mean, but I want him to be healthy too. So, if he can't, you know what I'm saying, they can try to make the fight, but if he's not going to be, you know, 100% and he's not going to be good to go, I don't want to see him, you know, force himself out there because, I mean, we've seen him, and when he was trying to fight Khabib, I mean, I heard that the doctors said that they didn't like the way he looked because he was trying to cut weight so fast because he took the fight on like 6 or 7 days notice, and he was just, I'm sure they were rushing him he was rushing himself to cut weight so fast. And man, God knows. I mean, I was hyped for the fight, but like, sometimes I think our excitement kind of drowns out the reality of what the fighters are really going through to get to that moment. Because I was like, you know, we were so excited, you know, damn, Holloway's gonna jump in last minute to fight Khabib, but like, not really realizing, like, man, he's really taking the fight on 1 week notice. Like, when have you ever heard of such a short time for a turnaround and a guy to jump in there who had no. he didn't even have a training camp. He was just going to go fight Khabib with no training camp, and I think it was 6 days notice actually. So I think it was less than a week. If somebody wanted to correct me on that, that'd be fine.
No, because he flew in on. I want to say they said he flew in on Sunday, and he had to try to make weight by Friday.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. That's insane. So, I mean, I was excited, but I wouldn't have wanted to see like if the athletic commission said that when he come out, you know, because he said he only needed a little bit longer and that he would have been able to weigh in and he would have made weight. So, you know, if he was like 3 pounds over or something like that, or four, 5, 6 pounds over, and he only needed a little bit longer to make it, you know, I'm sure that there was drastic measures being taken just for the sake of him making it in such a short time, which is unhealthy anyways. So he was forcing himself out there. I wouldn't have wanted to see him go out there and then take on an even more serious injury. Something happened to him in the cage, you know, and then put him into even, I don't even want to, you know, speak it. I don't even want to talk about it. Like, just put him into such a worse situation. Like, you know, if he would have passed out or something, or if he would have get choked out bad and he's like unconscious or something, or he passed out during the fight, like on his own, not even from taking shots or anything like that. If just God forbid something like that would have happened. I mean, that'd be awful to see that. You know, that's like, I don't think any of us would want to see Holloway go through that. So if I'm excited for him and Ortega, but I want to read and know. I mean, I want to be excited for it, knowing that he's going to go into it 100%. Not like he's going to try to force his body, you know, to be ready in time to fight. You know, I'd rather see him wait. I'd rather see him wait until, you know, January or February of 2019, if he needed, you know, extra time, than to see him try to force his body into being ready earlier. And then him possibly injuring himself more, and then, you know, hurting his career and his overall well-being.
Yeah, because I'm all about the fighter safety. I'm all about the fighter safety. I know me and you talked about this several times before. This won't be the first or the last time we talk about it. But I am so against guys fighting at weights that are so far from their walk around weight, because that's just not healthy, man. It's like you weigh, let's say you walk around at 200 and you're trying to get down to 145. I mean, you got to drop what, 50 pounds, 55 pounds. I mean, that's not healthy, man. I'd rather see guys fight closer to their walk around weight. I mean, I'm all for the health of the fighters, man. Just like I have a thing with the NFL. You know, I'm all about player safety, but at the same time, I'm a fan, so I still want to see a good product on the field. So with the UFC, I just don't know how you can make this right, how you can make stuff like this, you know, less and less. Because when I heard about Holloway, man, when they say he just didn't look right, because, you know, because of the weight cut, and then that's a red flag to me.
Yeah, man. I'm looking. I'm just reading into his record a little bit more. And if you look at, I mean, his work ethic is so crazy. Like, there's not guys that fight like this in the UFC anymore. Like, maybe, you know, this record goes years and years back, you know, into, you know, 2010, you know, 2011, 2012, like some of his, you know, first MMA fights ever in different fight leagues. But I mean, when you see like I'm going to read this off to you, cuz I'm kind of mind blown by how many fights he took back to back, Max Holloway, in that long run that he went on after he lost to McGregor. After he loses to McGregor, he goes on a 12 fight winning streak. Now listen to how close together he takes fights. He's basically taking fights and then starting a camp right after his fight. So he would win, and then 2 month camp, another fight, 2 month camp, another fight. The most biggest gap he's taken is like a four or five month gap. Fighters don't even fight like that. And look at this. So after he loses to McGregor, okay, January 2014, he fights some guy, Will Chope. He wins, you know, by technical knockout. Okay, that's January 2014. So after that, 3 months. So finish the fight. Have a fighters usually average a 2 month camp, possibly 3 months. So he could get done with the fight, you know, the first of the year, then have his training camp immediately after. He might go home for a week, start his training camp immediately after, jump right into another fight in April, Andre Feely, finish that fight. 4 months go by, has another fight. Right after that, 2 months go by, has another fight. Right after that, 4 months go by, another fight. Right after that, waits 2 months, has another fight. Right after that, 4 months, he has another fight. Right after that, 4 months, he has another fight. Right after that, he takes probably his longest gap that I even can find in his fight record, which is six months. It's a little less than 6 months. So he fought Jeremy Stephens in December of 2015. He waited a little less than 6 months. He fought Ricardo Lamas in the first week of June 2016. So a little less than 6 months still on a run like that. Then he takes 6 months later, he fights Pettis. Right after that, another 6 months later, he fights Aldo for the belt. And then another 6 months later, he rematches Aldo for the belt. So he started taking 6 month layoffs as like the biggest time gaps that he's taken between fights. Most of his whole career, he's fighting every 2, 3, 4 months. Like, it's between 2 and 4 month breaks that he's taken between fights. Like, I don't even know anybody who fights that often anymore.
Yeah, that's just insane, man. I mean, but one way to keep his skills sharp is to fight, man. And, you know, I respect a guy like that. Excuse me. Just like me and you was talking about with Cerrone, man. I think Cerrone, you know, he loved to fight so much, but at the same time, sometimes you got to let your body heal. You just can't go, you know, fight, go back to camp, fight, go back to camp, fight, go back to camp. You can't do that. You got to let your body heal, man. And I think that plays a big part into some of these guys when they fight like that, that they don't just lose a fight on points. They normally get knocked out or submitted. So, but that's a lot of work, man. Max put in some work, bro.
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah. When you were talking, I was just, you know, skimming over that record. I was like, man, this guy really finished a fight, take a camp, and then start another fight. And then he goes and does another fight. Like, you don't see a work ethic like that. Nobody takes fights back to back. I mean, McGregor took back, you know, he was fighting 2, 3, you know, times a year earlier on in his career. But I don't know even if his record is like that. I mean, that's crazy. You don't. These guys are out here fighting once a year. You know, once every year and a half, guys are out here fighting. You know, barely, even less than that. So that's just insane. This is a different thing though that I want. So shout out to Max Holloway. That's one of my favorite fighters. Shout out to Max Holloway. For your work ethic. That's just amazing. Max Holloway is just incredible. And much love from Lee and Keys Real Talk.
Yeah, so, come back bigger and better, and more importantly, healthier, Max.
Yeah, 100%. We wish the best for Max Holloway in his return. One thing that I wanted to ask you about was, man, did you watch that fight night card, the last fight night card, I think it was last weekend with the Gaethje fight, Gaethje and James Vick fight.
I watched the main event and the co-main event.
Yeah, all I was able to see because I was out. I forget what I was doing, but I made it home in time, and for some reason my TV wasn't letting me watch fight night. So my friend ended up. We got FaceTime so on the iPhone, so he just FaceTimed me and then just recorded his screen, so I was able to watch. Michael Johnson's fight through the FaceTime, and then after that, I missed Gaethje and Vic live, but I guess it was so short that I was able to pull it up on YouTube like 30 seconds after the fight because it wasn't even – if you just watched the fight highlights, that was pretty much like the whole fight because it was Gaethje that knocked out James Vic, got him out of there right away in the first round. That might have been like a 40-second fight. What do you think about Justin Gaethje?
It was 87 seconds.
Seconds.
I think, You know, man, I think Gaethje, man, is to me, he's going to give you an exciting fight, whether or not he gets knocked out or whether or not he knocks somebody else out. I just think that he needs to become a more rounded fighter, or he's going to be one of these guys sitting on his couch at the age of 50 and can't remember nothing. And Vic, man, he just didn't have nothing, man. First of all, he had a reach advantage. So why are you letting Gaethje close the distance? He got a reach advantage. I think he had like a four or five, maybe even 6-inch reach advantage on Gaethje. So the thing is anybody, I'm not even a UFC fighter. I know that you're supposed to use that to your advantage. So basically what you should be doing is throwing kicks and using a jab. Man, this guy let Gaethje walk him down. He let Gaethje walk him down. And then he let Gaethje close the distance. And then he tried to punch with him. But he had no power. So when he got put to sleep, I mean, when he got ran, he was out as soon as that dude's fist hit his chin. I was like, whoa. But I think Gaethje needs to become a more rounded fighter, even though, you know, most of his fights are kind of exciting. They're never boring. So, you know, good win for him.
Yeah. You know, I just want to say, like, some of the guys that I'm really a fan of happen to be big talkers. But see, though, the thing is that those same guys, 90% of the time, back it up. Like, Conor McGregor, one of my favorites. He's a talker. Tyron Woodley, he's a talker. But he wins fights. He don't get knocked out. Chael Sonnen, he's a big, big talker. One of the most famous shit talkers. But he wins fights. He's an excellent fighter. And besides the John Jones fight, you don't see him get dominated. I mean, John Jones stopped him in the first round. You don't see Sonnen getting beat like that. He doesn't lose to guys. But losing to John Jones is like that's kind of put that to the side. You know, it's okay. You can lose to John Jones.
Well, he lost to Anderson Silva twice, too.
Yeah, but if you watch the first fight with Anderson Silva, he dominated Anderson Silva the whole fight. And then got choked out in the fifth round. Like, it's one thing when you say to somebody, like, oh, yeah, you know, so-and-so was winning the fight in the first round, you know, the whole round, but then he got KO'd at the end of the first round. Okay, but that was one round. But when it's the whole fight, like, Chael Sonnen destroyed Anderson Silva. He embarrassed him.
Yes,
like,
he did.
If he had just not gotten choked out in the fifth round, Anderson Silva would have been looking bad after that, because Chael Sonnen beat him so bad with mental warfare, and he was 98% of the way to completing the trifecta.
The task. Yep.
Yes, exactly. He almost was at the mountaintop, but then he got choked out at the very end, and that's just crazy. But it's definitely more notable when it's the entire fight. You get dominated for 25 minutes, and then you get a lucky choke at the end. It's different than when guys, they get a couple, they're landing strikes, and then they get knocked out, like, in the first half of the fight. Kind of like, you know, DC, he got knocked out, John Jones. Like, DC, and you can argue in the first two rounds of his fight with John Jones last year that DC was landing on John Jones. Well, not that you can argue. It was right there to see it. He was landing on John Jones, and he was doing well. But then he got knocked out, I think, in the second round. So it's hard to argue for DC and say, you know, it's hard for me to go out and say, oh, DC was going to win that fight, but then he got knocked out, because it was only in the second round. He only was doing well for, you know, a round and a half, and then he got knocked out in the second round. But Chael Sonnen did 25 minutes of destroying Anderson Silva, you know, guarded his greatest of all time, and then got choked out in the fifth round. I don't remember what was the second fight, but I'm getting off topic here. My point was is that some of my favorite guys. They talk a big game, but they also back it up. James Vick talked a huge game to Gaethje and got knocked the fuck out, bro. He got swept so bad. James Vick, you need to go sit your ass down somewhere and think about your life. Think about your life. Because that was just embarrassing.
I think James Vick did. I think his talking was just to get a big fight. Because as you and I both have noticed, guys that run their mouth a lot tend to get things given to them, opportunities given to them. And I think Vic did that, and, you know, he had to step up in class, and he just wasn't ready. And one of the things that Kenny Florian said on the post-fight show was he was like, James Vic has a fundamental problem with defense. He doesn't have any defense. The only thing he wants to do is he'll strike with you, he'll kick you, but when he's moving back, he has no defense. And lo and behold, what was he doing when old boy knocked him out? He was moving backwards, put his hand down and got knocked out. But at the same time, you know, Vic was outclassed. He'll be back. But as far as him being a champ, I just don't see that in his future. I see him probably fighting to work his way up to the top five, maybe the top seven. But Gaethje, man, it's just, I don't know, man. You can't keep having wars every fight, Keys. You know what I'm saying? All your fights can't be wars. You know, sometimes you got to learn how to move your head, you know, use foot movement, stuff like that. Every fight, you can't take 75 significant strikes from the other fighter. that's just a recipe for danger. And, you know, good win for him. I want to say he called out Ferguson on the post-fight show. He said he wouldn't mind fighting Tony Ferguson next. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think realistically the only way that he would – I mean, because Ferguson's fighting Showtime, so, you know, I'm a fan of Showtime. I mean, yo, Pettis has a chance. Pettis, I think that's a good fight. Like, I mean, on the scale, it kind of looks like a mismatch. Like, why does Pettis get to fight Ferguson? I mean, I think it was more so not that he deserved to fight Ferguson, but more so that he was just probably one of the only guys available, and it does have some kind of storyline. I mean, Pettis was the lightweight champion, you know, earlier in his career. So it does, I mean, he still kind of can fight, you know, championship contenders at any point because he was a champion before. So he kind of always can insert himself right in there. But I think the only way that Gaethje would be able to fight Ferguson anytime soon is if Ferguson loses to Showtime Pettis. If he were to lose to Pettis, then I could see Gaethje possibly fighting Ferguson, you know, early 2019. But
I was thinking the same thing.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, because if Ferguson beats Pettis, then I'm sure that, you know, the winner of
he's gonna fight the winner. Yep.
Yeah, the winner of Khabib and McGregor is gonna be fighting Ferguson after that, early next year. So Gaethje. Maybe Gaethje could fight Edson Barboza. I feel like Gaethje and Barboza would be a good fight at this point, because they haven't. No one's mentioned that yet. I think that's a good scrap. Or possibly Gaethje and Kevin Lee. I don't know what I think. Kevin Lee's. I've been hearing rumbles of Kevin Lee and Ia Kenta fighting in December. I think right around the time that I was saying that's going to be a good, you know, week or two of fights for you. I think it's during that same period. That's what they're talking about. That first 2 weeks of December, they're saying Kevin Lee and Ia Kenta, you know, they might have a rematch.
I wouldn't mind seeing Gaethje and Kevin Lee. I wouldn't mind seeing that fight. I think that'll be a good fight. I know the talking would be fucking phenomenal. the shit yeah. talking that's gonna be going on. I know that's gonna be phenomenal. I don't know about Barboza and Gaethje. I just don't know, man. I think Barboza has a problem with guys with heavy hands, and as we all know, Gaethje has heavy hands. I just don't know. I know why, but you did bring up a good point about why is Ferguson fighting Pettis. When Pettis isn't fighting for the belt, he's a great fighter, man. He's a good fighter. He shows up. Even a fight against Dustin Poirier, if he didn't crack his rib, I think he was about – Dustin may have beat him, but I think Pettis would have gave him a fight. So, Pettis is game, and I think having Ferguson fight him, you know, a guy with, you know, that's well-rounded also, that can fight off his back, I think that's a good challenge for Ferguson coming back. The fight I'd rather see for Gaethje is against Kevin Lee, not Barboza. I'd rather see Kevin Lee and Gaethje fight.
Yeah. I like that fight, too. I think that's a good one. I think the UFC will make that fight, you know, probably the first half of 2019. Because it
2019,
looks like,
yep.
Because if you look at Gaethje, he's fought back-to-back-to-back-to-back in the UFC since he came in, too. He's fought, you know, really often. I mean, his first fight when he came in was, I think,
Michael Johnson.
Now I'm kind of forgetting when that was. But, I mean, he had that fight, and then he had – the Eddie Alvarez fight wasn't that long after. And then he had the Poirier fight wasn't that long after. And then he fought James Vick wasn't that long after. So, and all four of those fights, he has won performance bonuses of some kind. I know he got a performance of the night bonus for his knockout of James Vick. And then the Poirier fight, I think they got a fight of the night bonus, both of them. And then the one before that, him and Alvarez got a fight of the night bonus, both of them. And then the fight before that, him and Michael Johnson got the fight of the night bonus, both of them. So I know they usually give out $50,000 for those kind of bonuses. So if that's the case, then Gaethje has made
$200,000.
$200,000 just in fight bonuses, not including his purses for those four fights. So that's pretty crazy. That's pretty crazy. I mean, that's sounding like a big fight purse. If you were to have like some big main event fight and you're like a champion, you might make $200,000. And he did that just off, you know, putting on good showings. So I think there's two sides of it. One is I think that because Gaethje does have a wrestling background, he could add some. He could use his wrestling skills a bit more. I know he can wrestle. He has a wrestling background. I know he could use his wrestling a bit more. I think he should add wrestling into his game and start, you know, getting back to that a little bit and start doing some takedowns and try to avoid taking so many strikes. You know, he could probably start implementing some ground and pound into his game maybe and maybe just play it a bit more defensive if he's going to do the stand-up. I know he likes to, you know, throw leg kicks and stuff like that. I mean, he can keep going with that. I don't think that'll end his career anytime soon. And leg kicks are always good to wear down your opponent. But I think, yeah, if he adds wrestling into his game and he could, you know, start grounding, add some ground and pound in there, doesn't always have to put himself in the line of fire, standing and banging with guys constantly, then, and I think he could prolong his career. I mean, Gaethje's only 29 years old, so if he can start playing it a bit smarter, I think he can really have a long career. And it's still really early for him. I mean, he could be a star in the UFC and you know, who knows when. I don't even know. I mean, I was just about to say a year or two, but who knows when. It could be any given day. He could become a star. So, and just a really big name that people, you know, main event name people like to see. I mean, there's two sides. I mean, one is like Lee said, I agree with, is that, you know, he got to – watch out for his health, and so he doesn't end up like these guys, you know, a vegetable sitting on the couch, you know what I'm saying? He doesn't want to end up like that. And then on the other side of it is like, but at the same time, you know, for that style, he's you know, gotten all these fight bonuses, and he does put on great fights, win or lose, and he's 2-2 in the UFC since he's come in. But look at who he's fought. I mean, both of his losses are to top five lightweights in the world. One of his wins was to a top five lightweight in the world, because Michael Johnson was the number five lightweight at that time. And then his other win is to, I think, James Vick is like number 10 lightweight in the world, which like isn't as notable, but I mean, both of his wins are top 10, top five and top 10 guys. Both of his losses are top five guys. So he's fighting fierce competition. So he's got to be commended for the performances he's been able to put on, win or lose. And he's definitely exciting. Fans do like to see him. You got to commend him for the work he puts in.
No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, man. I think, go ahead.
But I think a fight that definitely needs to happen, and I want to see it in the first half of the early 2019, is I want to see Usman versus Covington, man. Covington should have never got an interim belt. And with Woodley fighting Darren Till, I think you have to now make the fight with Covington versus Usman. I mean, that's just the fight that people want to see. As a fan, I want to see that fight because these two guys don't like each other. So, but the UFC will probably fold to Covington's demands to fight the winner of the Tyron Woodley Darren Till fight, which I think he doesn't deserve, but he'll probably end up getting it. So if they don't give Usman Kobe Covington, I think they should have set up the RDA versus Usman fight, make that fight happen, and then we'll find out if Usman is for real or not. But I read somewhere this week where Robbie Lawler is coming back and he's going to fight Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. I like
that
fight.
Yeah, I heard that in January.
I like that fight on paper. But Wonderboy, if you're going to fight Lawler, you are going to have to come out your shell. You are going to have to stand and bang. You're going to have to throw punches. You're going to have to be a productive fighter. You will not be able to sit back and try to counterpunch Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler will kill you that way. So you will have to finally come out your shell, and you will have to be an exciting fighter against Robbie Lawler. So, Wonderboy Stephen Thompson, if you're listening, please, please, please come out swinging when you fight Robbie Lawler. Do not sit back and wait on the action, because Robbie will two-piece you up, and before you know it, you might be out cold. So I like that fight. I like the Wonderboy versus Robbie Lawler fight, and I would love to see Usman versus Kobe Covington, and if that doesn't happen, I'd love to see Usman versus RDA.
Man, that was hilarious. I need a playback of that clip. You said you were like, Wonderboy, please don't come out and counterpunch Robbie Lawler, because he will kill you that way.
He will piece you up.
Man.
You will get pieced
up. Yeah, montage. Like, we need like a playback of like some of the best moments on this show, because that would be right. That would be right up there. That was so good, man. That was so good. I could tell Lee must have been, you must have been thinking about that for at least a few minutes earlier today. He read that fight.
You know, when I first read about it, I was like, man, this fight has a chance to be a good fight. Only if Stephen Thompson comes out and decides to fight. If he sits back and do the Floyd Mayweather thing where he wants to just counterpunch, then it's going to be a boring fight, and he's going to get, and Lawler will just pick him apart. The same way Lawler did Rory McDonald. Rory McDonald wanted to counterpunch with Robbie Lawler, and he got toe up for like about three rounds. And then he decided to come out and fight, And that's when things, that's when the tide of the fight changed, when he decided to fight. So I think Stephen Thompson just needs to watch that fight and learn some things from that fight. Don't come out and sit back and you go second all the time. Sometimes you got to go first. I think in this fight against Robert Lawler, he's going to have to go first a lot.
Man, you know, just thinking of that and just seeing the way that, like, when you just said that, I just got a flashback to the Lawler and Rafael Dos Anjos fight, and just the way, like, how crazy Dos Anjos looked in that fight, how dominant and vicious he looked in that fight. It was scary. Like, I feel like everybody was like, yo, like, how is he doing this to Robbie Lawler right now? Like, I thought Robbie Lawler injured himself either before that fight or during the fight. Like, he broke his foot or, like, something like that. I thought, I could have sworn he was injured during that fight. But
yeah, they said he,
before the fight?
They said it happened during the fight because, remember,
okay.
He just put his back against, the fence, and he told Dos Anjos, come on. And he couldn't really move,
yeah.
So he was fighting off the fence, yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering why he was doing that. Yeah, I think that moment made Dos Anjos look so much better for that period of time. So if Robbie Lawler hadn't hurt himself and got injured during that moment, he probably wouldn't have been backed against the cage, and it probably would have looked a little bit different for those rounds. I mean, I still think Lawler, I mean, he made Lawler look bad in that fight. It just basically, when you said that, you know, about how, like, you know, Lawler picks apart, you know, counter punches, and then I think about how Dos Anjos made him look, and then I think about how bad Dos Anjos looked versus Colby Covington. It's just like, I don't even understand life. Like, how did that happen? Like, and I, like, you know, like that just, like, confuses the hell out of me. Like, I picked Covington on DraftKings that night because I just had a feeling. I was like, man, Dos Anjos looks so good versus Lawler, but I feel like he's going to get shown up somehow in this fight. Covington's going to figure it out. And he did. And he did it. Like, and he dominated. I mean, he did. It wasn't like an exciting dominant performance, but he did dominate the fight. I mean, Dos Anjos wasn't really able to do much of anything. And he definitely didn't look anything like he did versus Lawler. And that's just crazy to me. Guys have such a great performance, and then they turn around and just have a bum performance versus, like, a lesser fighter, like, right after. That's just crazy to me.
That's because RDA, okay, Covey Covington came out every time at the beginning of the round and just stoned him every time. And then the one time that RDA actually stopped backing up and threw a punch, he rocked Kobe. And Kobe just, like, kind of retreated for a minute. And I was like, you should have been doing that starting round two. Because he did the same thing in round one. Round one, he came out and went straight at RDA. Round two, he did the same thing. Round three, he came out, did that, and RDA punched him in the face. Round four, he came out, RDA didn't do anything. I was like, come on, man. But, you know, man, fighters kind of like beach water. You know, when they really, really doing good, you know, they at high tide. But when they really, really bad, they low tide. And I think RDA against Colby Covington, he was at an all-time low tide. And I think against Robbie Lawler, he was at an all-time high tide. So, you know, man, we'll see what happens down the road. You know, there's a lot of fights that could be made between now and the beginning of first quarter 2019. But I just hope the UFC finds a way to make guys fight guys instead of, don't be like boxing and have guys pick who they want to fight, when they want to fight, where they want to fight. If that was the case, I'll go back to watching boxing. Well, actually, I would never go back to watching boxing. So let me stop.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's entertaining for you to even say it, of the possibility of you going back to boxing.
Yeah.
I think the UFC, just having the mix of styles kind of does you know, change the pace of the fight, especially since so many boxers don't really do much of anything nowadays. I just see so many boxing fights, and it just looks like the same fight every time. You don't see too much changes in the fight. It just seems so, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just because it's just a one fighting style, and there's really not much of anything. I don't know. I mean, maybe it'd be better if it was, like, guys using, like, coming in with different, like, fighting stances and things like that. Like, guys coming in like Bruce Lee. If there was, like, stuff like that, and guys was, like, doing different kind of movements and stuff, maybe it'd be, like, more entertaining. But then again, I don't know. Because I guess boxing does sell a lot of tickets still, so there's an audience for that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
go. Audience first.
I know a few people had probably said this otherwise, but I mean, I know it by one of my favorite artists of all time, Joe Budden, said this in one of his songs, and it just kind of sticks in my head. And it's a simple quote, and he just said, you know, everything ain't for everybody. Everybody ain't for everything. And I was like, true. So I guess that really what it comes down to. And some people aren't for the UFC. And I'm just not for boxing. We not really. Lee's the boxing fan, not me.
Nah, it's a lot. But I think a lot of guys don't like, a lot of boxing fans don't like UFC because they're so used to boxing. Boxing is one style, you know. You got your gloves on, the other guy got his gloves on. You know, who going to get the better of who? Where in the UFC, you got a guy that can kickbox, a guy that can wrestle. You can throw knees. You can throw elbows. You know, UFC guys can do more things in there. And I think that turned boxing fans off. And I think one thing about boxing that UFC fans don't like is boxing dudes don't fight the best. They rather pick and choose who they fight when they fight. And that turns UFC fans off, and we're so used to seeing the best fight the best.
Kind of like how your boy Anthony Joshua don't want to fight Deontay Wilder.
I don't think Joshua don't want to fight Wilder. Joshua wants Wilder to fight in the UK first. He wants Wilder to come over there to fight. And I feel that the only way Joshua would be a big-time boxing star is to fight here in the United States. I mean, I know you told me before he sold out Wembley Stadium and all that and all this. That doesn't surprise me none because that's where he's from. He's from England. So, of course, fans will come out and support him. But I think as far as making an American fan, bringing them into his brand, he needs to fight here in the States. And I think if he was to beat Wilder over there, I don't think he would ever come over here and fight Wilder. I think that just wouldn't happen. But boxing is boxing. It's always going to be around because, you know, people like it. You know, little kids, some little kids are drawn to boxing. Boxing right now is totally not in the same league as UFC.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. I feel like, UFC, I think, UFC is the product for me out of MMA. UFC is the best product, you know, with the way that, you know, the way they package it, especially. I really like the way that, I've always liked the way the UFC has packaged their product. And I feel like a lot of other, my bad. I think a lot of other fight organizations have tried to mimic the way that the UFC packages their fighters and the fights itself and the events. A lot of other fight organizations try to mimic that, and they just can't seem to hit the nail on the head. So that's why I've always supported the UFC, and especially nowadays so much, because I just think it's getting better and better. You know, there are some areas where I don't really care for it too much. Like some of the super fight concepts that they like to do now are just stupid. And like with the WWE antics, you know, like when Brock Lesnar came into the octagon after DC beat Stipe, it just, that was really corny and stupid to me. It just looks so staged. It you might as well have just brought Vince McMahon into the octagon and just had him announce the fight himself or
yeah.
whoever. Have Theodore Long come in there. Y'all remember Theodore Long?
Teddy Long.
Yeah. That was my guy back in the day. That was when I used to watch wrestling. Me and my brother, were big fan of Teddy Long. That was the real general manager of wrestling. All these other guys can't compete with him. But anyways, yeah, you should have just had Vince McMahon or one of them guys come in and announce it, because that thing was just saying WWE all over it. And it's cool. You can have the wrestling product, but don't make UFC try to have that and mimic another brand. Do what UFC does. You don't have to try to put all those drama and fake fireworks into the fight to try and hype it up. That's not what you do. You're trying to be like somebody else, and y'all do just fine being you. You don't need to have all these, you know, big-headed guys coming in and talking like they actually watch the fights. I bet you Brock Lesnar hasn't watched the UFC fight since he last returned. I don't even think he was watching the fights before his last return. He's an idiot. So that's the end of that. I don't even want to go into it. But anyways, it was a good show. We got off a lot of topics. Lee was right. There was definitely a lot of moving parts, and they're still moving, and there's some moving that we still got to catch up to, and we'll catch up to it in the next one. So we appreciate everybody for listening in. Special shout out to Max Holloway. We hope you come back and have a great return, and I want to see you at 100%. So shout out to Max Holloway. Like I said earlier, shout out to Cam Meekins, because that's a dope artist, you know, from the Boston area. He's repping the town or repping the city, and he's doing his thing. So shout out to him. And shout out to all the listeners for supporting our show. And if you were listening tonight, shout out to you. And everybody, you know, stay positive. Like I always say, call in 917-889-3251. And shout out to Lee. Lee, if you want to give your shout outs, go shout out some shout outs. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't have any shout outs, man. I just want to tell everybody have a good evening, be safe, be on the lookout for our next show. Man, Keys, we're going to at least try to, man, here we're going to work. We're going to pound out a schedule where we're at least on twice a week, man. I know you guys want us on the air more. Me and him want to be on the air more. So me and him will pound out a schedule to give you guys more of Lee and Keys real talk, you know. So stay tuned, more to come. And everybody out there, stay blessed, stay safe, and love each other.
For sure. And if you do something nice, or if you do something nice for somebody, and then they say, how can I repay you? Tell them, you don't need to repay me. People always feel like if you do something nice for them, that they feel obligated to give you money. Or they feel obligated like they owe you something after that. They feel bad if they don't have nothing to give you because you just helped them out or in a crisis situation or something like that. Just tell them to pay it forward. Tell them, I just
exactly.
did something to help you out.
Yep.
So the way you can pay me back is
repay
by helping
me
somebody
is by paying
out.
It forward. Yep.
Exactly. You pay me back by helping somebody else out, much like yourself when you see somebody else, and then that person can pay. You know what I'm saying? Pay it forward. That's what that means. So pay it forward and just try to spread that kind of love, because I know it's hard sometimes to stay positive in this world. I mean, me myself, I struggle with that a lot. Like, you know, on this show, I think we sound like, I mean, I might sound like I got things figured out, or we got things figured out, and like things are all, you know, it's a perfect sunny day, but that's not true with most people. That's not definitely not true with me. So, I can't speak for Lee, but I'm sure he's got plenty of issues himself. So, you know, we can't stand up here, act like that, you know, everything is all perfect, and we don't got, you know, think roadblocks that we're faced with, and I know it is hard to stay positive sometimes. So, but you know, the moments when you can help somebody else is instead of, you know, doing for yourself, are the moments when it'll remind you why you should be positive. And then when it comes back and someone helps you out, it'll reinforce your mind to say why you should stay positive. Those are the times that really shine through. So look out for those times and try to help people and stay positive. And keep supporting Lean Keys Real Talk. And call in and talk with your host at 917-889-3251. The link's always in the description. Shout out to everybody. Have a good night. Lee, have a good night. Stay blessed.
You too, Keys.
We over and out.
Peace.